Collective need and imagination of the community.
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective. The Latino Media Collective delivers consequential coverage from the biggest countries in South America to the smallest enclaves of Central America and the Caribbean, and is available on SoundCloud, iTunes Podcast, and Google Play Music. The Latino Media Collective is recorded in WPFW Studios and airs Fridays at 1 p.m. on WPFW, Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers, having found you guilty, 10 years.
What?
Come on, get in that cell.
I was in jail too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find, just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Hello and welcome to Crossroads. We come to you every week at the same time. Crossroads is broadcast live on WPFW 89.3 FM, your station for jazz and justice. WPFW is heard around the world, and particularly to those men and women and juveniles in correctional institutions, jails, and detention facilities. We understand we reach close to about 2,000 institutions. Thank you for listening and tuning in and sending us your emails, your phone call, your calls, so we can bring you stories on topics that you need to hear. And this morning is one of those programs, that you will find some interesting information, something that's going to shock you. You didn't know it was going on, how people are being treated even after they've been released from prison. We'll be talking about the broken sex offender laws that women are working to fix. And usually it's always the women who are on the front line arguing, fighting, and trying to straighten it up for us men who got in some joogie-boogie, some old foolishness. But to the mothers, the wives, and the girlfriends who are fighting on behalf of their loved ones in these institutions, this show is a must-hear show. We're talking about the sex offender laws, and when you hear how men are being treated after serving their sentence and being released, they can still keep you locked up for years without a conviction, without a trial, without due process. Man, this is something that you'll hear. But before we do that, we open up at what we call the grapevine. The grapevine is information that you can use. Here we go. Facing intimidation, black women prosecutors say enough. A lawsuit filed by St. Louis' first black female prosecutor highlights the virulent opposition progressive black women in the prosecutor role say they have encountered. St. Louis's first black prosecutor is fighting back. This week, Circuit Attorney Kimberly Garner filed a federal lawsuit against her entire city leadership, the entire city, accusing it, its mostly white police force and political establishment, of engaging in a racially motivated conspiracy to drive her out of office and block her efforts to make the city's justice system less punitive towards people of color. Gardner, who took office in 2017, is hardly alone in facing opposition. Many of the recently elected, increasingly progressive district attorneys who are black and female around the country have run into entrenched resistance from conservative, often white police officers and their unions, judges, governors, and even attorney general of the United States. And black women prosecutors in particular have experienced a targeted, vehement form of defiance and intimidation. Gardner's suit cites a rarely used federal law from just after the civil rights that allowed the United States government to crack down on the Ku Klux Klan and other racist groups, and argues that St. Louis has been acting just like such an organization. St. Louis Police Officers Association and officials in the city have all denied the allegations. Governor Cuomo signs law that allows New York to prosecute those pardoned by a president. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo signed legislation on Wednesday that would allow the state to prosecute people who have received a presidential pardon for the same offense, which could potentially affect associates of President Donald Trump. The bill, which was passed by the state legislature in May, closes New York's double jeopardy legal loophole that protected individuals who are pardoned by a president for federal crimes from being prosecuted at the state level for the same offense. The change goes into effect immediately and applies to future and past offense, provided a plea has not been entered. This is one of them anticipated laws that they are expecting President Trump to pardon some of his cohorts or buddies. So the New York governor has passed a law that says whoever Trump pardoned broke the law and committed an offense in New York City, you're not going home. You're not getting away with it. They're going to lock you up. So it's like they're expecting President Trump to pardon some of his buddies. So in New York City, they're saying if the president do pardon you, it don't make no difference. We're going to take you to trial anyway in New York City. Can you hear me now? Prison officials tout video visitation's convenience. Families say they're paying high rates for second-rate services. Video calls are the newest trend in revenue-generating communications in prison and jails. In 2015, the Prison Policy Initiative, a nonprofit organization working to reduce mass incarceration, estimated roughly 600 facilities across the country use videos. Today, that number is likely much higher, according to their website. Secaucus and JPay, two of the leading corrections-focused tech companies, provide video services to 573 facilities nationwide. The companies bill video as a boon for prisoners and their families, offering them a convenient way to stay connected while behind bars. But many who use the video system said they are paying high rates, as much as $1 a minute in some places, for a second-rate service. Advocates for lower phone and video rates in prison and jail say the companies are profiting from people's desperation to stay in touch. Many struggle to get their money back and have limited consumer protection to advocate for more favorable rates, while Skype and other video platforms like FaceTime or Google are free for people on the outside. The price of video calls varies wildly from facility to facility. The costs add up quickly. On average, responders spend $63 a month, with a handful estimating the expenditures at $400 to $500 per month. Man, this ain't right. And lastly, the lives of New Jersey's 19,000 inmates may change as a result of Murphy's prison reform. Nonviolent prisoners in New Jersey will be eligible for parole more quickly. Inmates may apply for financial aid while taking college courses in prisons. More than 80,000 people on parole or probation are now able to vote in Jersey, ending a law that stripped former inmates of voting rights until they finished serving their complete sentences, which included time on parole and probation. And as the state looks to voters to say whether marijuana should be legalized, people convicted of low-level marijuana crimes would have their cases sealed, preventing the convictions from being used against them in the future. Other New Jerseyans who have not committed crimes in 10 years can wipe their records clean if they didn't commit a serious offense. So this is a look around the country of some of what's going on, and that's been what we call the grapevine. Now we get to our guest for today's show. Our topic is broken sex offender laws that women are working to fix. And what is a sex offender? Some jurisdictions may commit certain types of individuals that have been designated dangerous sex offenders to state-run detention facilities following the completion of their sentence. This is because a person has a mental abnormality or personality disorder that makes that person likely to engage in more sexual offense, if not confined in a secure facility until he or rarely she has been rehabilitated as possible. So we're talking about violent sex offender laws in general, what's going on particularly in the state of Virginia. And we have people here who have been on the front line fighting for their loved ones who've served their time, got out, and still locked up without a release date, without a parole date, without a hearing, without, and this is unconstitutional, and they keep changing the laws, and they keep moving the goalposts. When you get to the five-yard line, you're back at the 50. They keep moving the fences and the gates. And we got some ladies here this morning who are very passionate, knowledgeable about what's going on to our folk who have been designated as sex offenders in the state of Virginia, and how you serve your time, and they still can lock you up and hold you for as long as they want to hold you. My guest is Dr. Benita Thompson, principal, consultant, dedicated educator for over 40 years, and Kirsten Darby, an authority on civil commitment. And she drove 2 hours, folks, to get here this morning. We come on at 10. She had to get up at 5 o'clock to get here for this 10 o'clock show. We want to thank you, Kirsten, for coming so far to give up so much information to people who need. Thank you for coming in, and thank you, Dr. Thompson.
Thank you for having
us. We appreciate
us.
Both of you. Kirsten.
Thank you. We appreciate you, too.
We do. Thank you so much.
Well, that's what the warden told me, but I don't believe him.
Yeah. But you can believe us.
Good morning, Kirsten. Mm-hmm. You've been working on the front line with this civil commitment issue in Virginia. How bad is it, or what is it?
Okay, for the last couple of years, I've been a retired Virginia school teacher, and to put in perspective, this is not a lack of empathy for victims of sexual crime. We know how serious that is. We do understand how serious that is. But victims themselves or survivors, that their goal is not further incarceration for the most part. I mean, when you speak to the majority of victims, and of course, both of us being in the schools, we have come across survivors. But, you know, the point of what's happening here is these are mostly men, you know, in the facility in Virginia Center for Behavior Rehabilitation, who have successfully completed their sentence. A judge gave them a certain amount of time depending on the severity, the seriousness of their crime. They've completed that. Near the end, all of a sudden, you know, the Commonwealth wants to look at certain men who are in their database and say, oh, they must be sexually violent predators, you know, because of a mental abnormality that you know, it could be questionable, and that they are – that not just having the mental abnormality, because, you know, let's face it, most of us probably have some type of, disorder, personality disorders. But, it's not a fact of having that disorder as much as – is it going to affect their volition and make them or cause them to commit a sexually violent crime? You know, yes, as, you know, people who have been in prison, we do know men often do get probation violations and go back, but rarely do those convicted of a sex offense go back for a sex offense. They may go back because they don't register, or they might go back, or they forget to register, or they forget to say when they move, or, you know, they might have a beer with a friend, or and they'll, you know, send them on a probation violation.
Let me ask you this.
Uh-huh.
How does the government apply this civil commitment? If someone in prison and they serve, say, 5 years.
Right.
And just before the time up, they get a hearing, a static 99 hearing, or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And a psychologist would make a recommendation that based on their observation of you and whatever, they feel or believe or guess or assume that you may commit another crime in the future.
Correct.
And based on that belief or that assumption, mm-hmm. they can hold you indefinitely. And you got Ms. Garnett Bonham. We got another young lady here whose son had finished serving their time, mm-hmm. and they're still fighting for their freedom. And
right.
they paid their price to society, and yet they're paying another price that you can't get them out.
Correct. Right. They, in And within somewhere between 10 and 15 months before their sentence is suspended, or some, like in the case of several people I know, they go back in for a probation violation, and then they didn't think that they were a sexually violent predator before, but then when they go in for a violation that has nothing to do with a sexual crime, the state, you know, the Commonwealth decides, okay, we're going to get them this time. In the case of Galen Bachman, he had been out in the community. They tried him as a sexually violent predator the first time. A jury determined he is not a sexually violent predator. They put him, you know, he went in on a probation violation because he was advocating against
this. And that was a technical violation.
A technical violation. He was, and during that time, and it's been, well, 4 years now, but during that time, they, you know, tried him again. And they would not allow his first, you know, trial to be brought up. They would not allow the evaluator, you know, from the first time who said he was not a sexually violent predator. They left all of that out of the evidence. The judge would not allow it. And, you know, here right in Arlington, Virginia. So when he, you know, went through this trial, this jury did find him a sexually violent predator because they didn't have all the information, basically. And now the last hearing he had was for conditional release. He would still be a sexually violent predator, which means he would be wearing the ankle monitor and he would always be under the discretion.
Question, he did 4 years and got released.
Well, he did 7 years, I believe he
got released. Now he's been locked up.
Case.
After he's been released, he's been back in on his civil commitment status for four years, fighting to get out for a crime he hasn't committed, a crime they think he might commit
for a future imaginary crime.
Ooh.
And the statute is so, you know, unclear. You know, they look at that he's got a, you know, a mental impairment or disorder, and he has the predicate offense that is not violent, but in Virginia law, they word it so it looks like it's violent. And he is, you know, is fighting all of that, but they use the term so likely or likely to commit a sexual offense, but they don't define what that is. Likely in the dictionary is over 50%.
Yeah.
The highest that they could come up with is 20%. But in actuality, you know, in terms of sex offenses in general or those convicted of sex crimes, the recidivism rate is really, for sexual crimes, is somewhere between 3 and 5%, which is lower than any crime.
Dr. Thompson, you want to join in and share your thoughts on what we just talked about in terms of how this has impacted you, your family?
Yes, it's a very harsh impact because in 2001, my son was sent to prison for a sex offense. And the judge said that he would be able to get out in 2008. So in 2008, we were all ready to go and pick him up, and we find out that because he had a sex offense and because while he was in prison, the Virginia government came up with a law that if you have had a sex offense, you can be, once you finish your sentence, you can be sent to civil commitment indefinitely for the rest of your life. That was awful. So we spent a lot of time and money for 3 years trying to get him off of the civil commitment roll. So he stayed in jail past his time for 3 years as we worked on trying to get him out. Finally, his attorney told us, listen, the only way I can get him out is that he says, okay, I'm a sexually violent predator. Mm. However, I have taken a sex offender treatment program the whole time that I was in prison, which they do, and he did, and he learned a lot through that. So that was a very good program while he was in jail, the sex offender treatment program. So We didn't really want him to say that, but since the attorney said that's the only way he could get out.
And that
out,
hurt him, didn't it?
Yeah.
That hurt him.
He had to say it. So he said it. He got out on conditional release. He had to wear an ankle bracelet. He had to be monitored by a PO. Even though he finished all of his time, he still had to be monitored by a PO.
How can you be on parole and you finish your time?
You finish all of your time. And you have to have an ankle bracelet and be monitored by a PO. You have to take take the polygraph tests.
Every 90 days or so, isn't it?
And you have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. So you have to take a polygraph test every 90 days or every quarter. You have to pay for the test. And the test includes were you sexually involved with any kids, were you around any schools?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So that means you got to stay in the house because you can't – everything on that questionnaire, on that form – means that you're interacting with people, human beings all over the community.
Correct.
And they can violate you because of your contact. So you have to pay for a polygraph test. Is that still going on now?
Yes, you have to pay for the polygraph test, and you have to pay for taking outpatient sex offender treatment programs. So, and obviously you're paying for your PO, you know. So it's a money-making
thing.
And this is what they're doing.
You know, you said something earlier, excuse me for cutting you off. We said something when we were talking before we did the show that I found very heartbreaking when you say that the men who are in this VCR for violent sexual offenders in Virginia.
Right. VCBR, yeah.
VCBR. Mm-hmm. Okay, I didn't go to school.
That's okay.
That the kids, they can't have any contact with their kids. If you get this designation of a violent sex offender, whether you had a relationship or a sex offense with a kid, you can't interact with your kids with that tag on you?
Right. In most cases, that's the truth. That they, you know, you certainly can't live in the home, you know, with your children.
Can you visit them? Or can they visit you?
After a while, with supervision and monitoring, you have to work it out with the probation officer, who is, again, you know, a criminal hired by the Department of Corrections, even though you're not part of the Department of Corrections
anymore.
And this
is a civil commitment, but yet you got law enforcement and authorities
over you,
monitoring and telling you what to do, and this is a civil commitment.
Correct.
It's not a therapeutic environment at all, and it's supposed to be because constitutionally you can't do this, you know, unless you're saying, oh, we're giving therapy and it's a therapeutic environment and we're helping people to readjust to the community. Now, if they're helping people to readjust to the community, why are they also taking people that are from Colombia,
South America,
and putting them there when I have letters from men there? And they tell me all of the things that are going on there. And one of them is from Colombia. And he served his time. He was visiting here. He served his time. And at the end of his time, ICE was going to
deport him,
which is fine. But the civil commitment people in Virginia said, oh, no. We want to take him into civil commitment. So they'd rather pay have the citizens of Virginia pay $150,000 a year.
Per person.
To do this instead of going ahead and deporting him to Colombia. They're making money. This is their cash cow.
You know, you said something that rung a bell. When I was confined over at St. Elizabeth's Hospital for the criminally insane in John Howard Pavilion for 3 years at 20 years old, and they told my attorneys and families the exact same thing, that he's getting therapy, he's getting proper medication, he's going to recreational therapy, vocational therapy, and all that. They had me in a room on Thorazine, tied down to the bed, beating my butt from everywhere but loose. And that was my therapy. And the medication they gave me wasn't for treatment. It was for control, to keep you docile and passive so you don't strike out or act out. So I didn't know if I was crazy or not. you know. Mm-hmm. And these same language again. When you told me earlier outside how they treat the men inside, this is a supposed to be a hospital or a therapeutic setting, not a prison environment. And they got correctional staff or using correctional laws and policies on patients, because that's technically what they are. They are patients, but they're treating them like criminals, and they're applying correctional institutional laws, rules, and regulations to these folk. And they ain't got, how's the judges going along with this? I mean, what's going on? Can somebody see that this ain't right?
It's a well-kept secret as to, you know, the environment in there. I mean, they, you know, they do provide courses, but it is a prison environment. Every study, anything you've read on mental health treatment will tell you it is best served in the community.
Yes.
And honestly, I don't think any of us would have an issue with, you know, friends, loved ones, you know, people that, you know, we try to support with, you know, taking courses or receiving mental health treatment in the community. But when you're putting them in a prison environment where there are cameras everywhere, when there are 18, 19-year-old guards or SSTTs, as, you know, as they call it, that can move them back in treatment and hold them there longer, you know, they, even though they know nothing about, you know, the therapeutic, you know, then it's going to be very hard to, you know, work through, you know, any mental health issues you may have when you're in a prison environment. And it is very much like prison comparatively.
One of the things that pops up is we talked earlier about the kids. A lot of these men have kids.
They do.
Are the kids allowed to visit them inside, or are they allowed to touch them? Since this is supposedly a therapeutic environment, not correctional, not custodial, but civilly, how does the kids react, or can kids come into that facility? Have you seen any kids going in on visiting days?
I have never seen a child there. I don't know if you have, Bernita. There is a procedure to go through to allow children to visit, and they do have contact visits. I don't know how easy it is, and so I can't speak a lot on that. I've never seen a child there, and I know many men have, you know, been told that they cannot see their children, speak to their children.
You said contact visits. In prison, you're allowed a minute or 2 minutes to say hello when you first come in for the start, the beginning of the visit, and at the end, you're allowed a goodbye hug.
Right.
Is that the same thing inside?
Yes, basically the same. You sit at the table, and there's, yeah, that's the only contact is a hello hug and a goodbye hug. You know, I mean, you can pray together. I have prayed with men there, and you can hold hands to pray, but not for any
length of time.
Yeah, any length of time.
So, if a kid hasn't seen their mother or haven't seen their father in years, and they come over there and they got 1 minute to hug daddy, who you haven't seen in years, and they tell you to back up, sit over here, that is very devastating to a child.
It is,
you
yes.
know, and for these men to be not in custody. Criminal custody, in civil custody, mm-hmm. and to lose and be treated the same way you are if you're inside of an institution. Mm-hmm. This is not right.
No.
What support have y'all gotten from some of the Congress people in Virginia? Is anybody on board trying to do something to help out?
We have spent the last couple of years, we have gone to the General Assembly during this time of the year. And, you know, we've had some more support lately, than in the past. It's a very difficult topic when you bring it up, and it's kind of an interesting story. I ran into a page, a 12-year-old, at the General Assembly, and he asked what our cause was. And of course, you know, I couldn't go into real detail with him, so I told him, you know, we're trying to stop people from being in jail after they've already completed their prison sentence. We're trying to stop that. And he was like, oh, that's a good idea. And then afterwards, when I left, I thought, we shouldn't have to tell anybody what the crime was. This should not be a situation for any crime. If you've completed your time, you've completed your time. You know, if you need some type of counseling or something, then
you get it on outside.
Then you get it, you know, in the community and community supervision. And that's, you know, there's, like I said, I don't know that anyone would have an issue with that if it was accurate and coming from qualified, you know, psychiatric psychiatric professionals that, you know, are making these diagnoses.
You know, this is crazy. This is imperfect science. They give you a static 99 test, and the psychologist would dictate or suggest
yes.
that there's a possibility that you may commit a, I call that crystal ball law.
That's they're basically
they're looking in the crystal
is.
Ball, and they're going to predict what you did, what you may. And then the other piece is that you have to take sex offenders all over the country have to take a lie detector test every 3-4 months mm-hmm. to prove that they haven't been around the school, they haven't been molested a kid, et cetera, et cetera. And yet, the lie detector is not admissible in court. It's not a concrete science. Mm-hmm. And the psychologist with the static 99 test is not a concrete example. He's going to predict what you can do 4 or 5 years in the past. Then he give you a lie detector test, which is not used in law. If it was 100% accurate, they would use it in the court.
Correct.
So they use an imprecise law to take away your freedom and destroy your life and your family.
Correct.
And what's going on? People not hollering up about, standing up about this? Somebody not screaming? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we got to take a break.
Okay.
We'll be right back. But if you wish to call in to join this discussion about broken sex offender laws that these women are working to try to fix, the number to call is 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. You can call in and talk to Dr. Benita Thompson or Ms. Kirsten Darby. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Guys.
Had a little, I thought that I needed a lot. A little was overrated, but a lot was a little too complicated. See, zero didn't satisfy me, a million didn't make me happy. That's when I learned the lesson that it's all about your perceptions. Hey, are you a papa or a superstar? So you act, so you feel, so you are. It ain't about the size of your car. It's about the size of the faith in your heart. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay to laugh. You better thank God for that. Backcountry of Brazil, I met a young brother that made.
Yeah, that was India Arie. There's hope. There's always hope. No matter what happens or what you go through, there's always hope. And we have three beautiful ladies in here. Only two of them on the microphone, and the third would like to pull you up here, Garnett. Come up to the mic a minute, because you're writing notes. We'd like for you
I'm
to say
tweeting.
This. Come on over here, Garnett. Get on that microphone. We're talking about broken sex offender laws that these women are working to fix. We're talking about a civil commitment. Generally, civil confinement is a controversial implementation of state power. It's the state going crazy where they can hire and where they can lock you up because they think you might do something next week. If that's the case, everybody in jail could be technically placed on a civil commitment. Because for all of you listening inside, you've all heard when you say tell somebody you're going home in prison, one of the staff will tell you, you are coming back. I know you're coming back. Now, okay, but suppose when he made that statement, he could civilly commit you in saying that you're coming back. So most of the men and women in jail cannot get out if they use the same rationale.
Most of us in general. I mean, if you want to just look at society in general, they could come to any one of us and say, oh, well, you're going to do this in the future, or you're going to do this in the future. I mean, you can't commit somebody based on that.
We'll take our first caller. You on the air, please. Question or comment?
Yeah, my name is Lee Wilkins. I'm in the mental capacity a long time. I'm the whistleblower on the health care fraud, mental
reduction. Can you speak up a little? I can't hear you.
I want to talk online. I want someone to come out here and talk to me, man on man. Oh. I live at Sunrise Senior Living, 11621 New Hampshire Avenue in Silver Spring, Maryland.
Uh-huh.
And this is a conspiracy on me, man. Like it's too low, huh? I don't live in this town, but I live in New Jersey a long time. I'm from Savannah, Georgia originally.
Uh-huh.
I came a long time. One of the best feelings up I had in my life was March 9th, 2005. March 13th.
So what are you asking? What are you asking me?
I want someone to come out and talk to me man on man. I'm gonna work for. I got a lot of stuff I can contribute to this. I've already contributed. Right? I'm still going to the VA, and they still got the conspiracy on me, man. And
well, let me do this. Let me do this. You can stay on the line and give the engineer your number, and we'll give your number to one of the attorneys that we work with and get them to look into your case. We'll try to do that. There's no guarantee. We got to find somebody who can come to visit you to find out exactly what's going on. Stay on the phone and give the young lady your phone number, and we'll give it to an attorney to see if they can help you follow up, okay? Next caller. You want a question or comment, please?
Yes, Roach, how you doing?
Okay, who is this?
This is Kwazi. Sister Benita, you were calling. I worked on Mwando's case.
Uh-huh.
And the thing is that Mwando, that law does not apply to him. The law says anyone convicted of end up about 4 violent sex offenses. Mwando, it didn't apply to him. He wasn't convicted of a violent sexual offense.
Most of the men aren't convicted. This is Garnet Robbins Boffman. Most of the men aren't. Some of them are. They changed that definition. It used to be 4 offenses. Now it's 29 offenses that are covered by the law. The AG,
right.
The Attorney General's Office and Mark Herring weren't collecting enough souls for their prison, their pre-crime preventative detention system. Most of the guys that are, well, not most, but a number of men that are there now that are returned there are being returned not for convicted offenses, not for anything sexual, but they've gotten picked up for a technical violation. They've had a dirty urine, something. A lot of it's marijuana, which they're trying to make legal in Virginia. This doesn't make sense.
At the time, the law did not apply to Mwando.
That's correct.
It didn't apply to him now.
That's correct. And I will tell you, there is some good news, if it's all right. They are supposed to be letting Mwando Amerson go home on Thursday, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
He's supposed to be released on Thursday. We are very hopeful that he will be.
Okay.
We're going to have a celebration.
Thank you for calling in. We appreciate your comments. Next caller, please. Question or comment?
Oh, okay. Just a comment. I was working with one of the county police force and stuff in training capacity, and I always recommended that the employment assistance program for people who are stressed and have psychological issues, that the psychologist wouldn't be able to release their senses even if they suspect them of a crime, only if they give direct plans that they are intending to commit a crime. And so all their dreams, and they share some of their fantasies and dreams and compulsions, they'll be able to do that freely. Because fantasies and dreams and compulsions and what you feel like doing, your name must not necessarily act on.
Correct.
But you only break confidence and have to report to law enforcement or others if you see that they directly are making plans to hurt somebody. Not fantasize about hurting anybody. That's to be kept confidential. Because being a former veteran, I fantasize about, doing a whole lot of things that wasn't good, But I wasn't going to follow through with it. I would just, that gives them the capacity to be a better psychologist and not have these people and their patients bullshit, excuse my language, or be... I'm more honest and forthcoming with them without fear of them being breaking confidence. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay.
And yeah, that's just a mess.
That's what it is. It's a mess.
Yeah, the psychologists aren't really the ones working directly with them most of the time. They just do the evaluation and decide, okay, we think you might do this. And
that's speculation.
Right, it is.
Only speculation.
Correct.
I fantasize about doing a whole lot of horrendous stuff when I was going through PSCD and getting treated from Vietnam era combat.
Mm-hmm.
I never would go and do that, but it was therapeutic for me to share those violent visions and violent compulsions. And that's what helped me heal a lot faster.
Right.
But if I felt kind of like, oh God, if I tell them what I've been, what I've been dreaming about and thinking about.
You never get out of jail.
Right. They will use anything they say against them, unfortunately.
I would never have been that forthcoming. You know what I mean? If I suspected they're going to break confidence because of my fantasy, I'm like, oh, no, I'll just go ahead and lie to them and put on the best facade and stuff like that. I don't think nothing about hurting people. Never, ever.
Okay, thank you for your comments. We got about four more on the line. You might want to respond to his
No, I agree, but yeah.
Okay, we'll take the next caller. You're on the air, please. Question or comment? Hello?
Good morning.
Yes?
Hi, I was calling because I have a son who is already in St. Elizabeth's, and he's being evaluated.
Can't hear you. Speak up, please.
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have a son who's currently at St. Elizabeth. He's going for sentencing next month, early February. And he took an insanity plea, but they stripped that away, and he's going to be sentenced. And I was hoping that I could give you my number so that someone could, you know, talk to us about what our options would be. Because they're talking about, they convinced him once they stripped away the insanity plea to take a regular plea, so he's going to go to Button. And he won't get the same kind of treatment that he's receiving here in the city.
Yeah.
And he'll be so far away that I won't be able to see him. And part of the improvement that he's made in all the time he's been at St. Elizabeth's.
How long has he been at St. Elizabeth's?
He's not going to make that same kind of improvement.
How long has he been in St. Elizabeth's?
Say it again?
How long has he been in St. Elizabeth's?
It'll be 2 years in May, but I don't think he's going to be there then.
Okay. Again, I'd like to send out to other listeners. This is a rare thing that we do because we don't have any staff to help us to follow up on this, and we've been flooded. All we can do is take in your name and try to ask a lawyer, can you help them? We're not the ones that can do the help because we don't have the staff, the money, the resources, the assistance. We just bring you the information, and hopefully that'll help you. So you can stay on the line and give a young lady your number, and we'll call an attorney and see if they'd be interested in taking your case pro bono or free or help out. But we don't have any resources to do the help directly ourselves. So give her your name and number, and we'll call an attorney and see if they would be interested in talking to you and seeing what they can do to help out, okay? Hello?
Another call.
Okay, you got another one. Come on, when they call, the phones are jumping off the hook, Garnett. You on the air?
Hi, yeah, this is Eldon in Kansas.
This is who?
Eldon in Kansas.
Okay.
Kansas. A couple comments I would like to make.
Can you keep it short or brief? Because we got about four or five more calls on the air, please.
Okay,
give me one of your comments. Okay.
I think it should be known that only 20 states in the United States have civil commitment. 30 do not. And secondly, I forgot the 3 points I was going to make. Anyway, a comment was made about therapy being provided, and I can tell you there is no therapeutic environment in any of these programs.
That's right.
And I think Garnett and everyone would agree with that.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, this is a very, very important point, and then I'm done. If you look at the people who are being put in civil commitment, you will find a high degree are black, African-American, and a high degree identify as gay.
Yeah.
And I am very involved with the Kansas program and others, and I think that's a statistical accurate fact, that if you're gay, your chances of going there are higher, and if you're black, you're going to end up there.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I would assume, without us even saying it, that the majority of the people that's being held on civil commitments are black people of a color and gay. And the gay folks or transgenders are catching double hell inside of these institutions, folks. Under your name, your tax dollars, as citizens of this country, and you have the right to inquire is what's happening to these folks inside these institutions. I know a lot of folks tell me they don't want to do nothing because they feel they're loved one will be retaliated against.
Correct.
And they will. And believe me, I know they will when they know that you can get to somebody that can shake the bushes and make a little noise, and they figure their job is on stake and at stake. So this topic or this subject is something that we're going to have to spread all around, because this, again, why is it that black folk and people of color make up the majority of the people on the bottom of the deck? Mm-hmm. And no matter how they treat it or what they call us or the classification, we're getting screwed. Our next caller, please. Mm-hmm. Our next caller, please. Hello, you're on the air. Question or comment? Hello? Are you there?
Next caller.
Next caller. Oh, yeah, there you go. Come on with it.
How you doing, sir? I'm a long-time listener, but first-time caller, and I'll let you know I am a registered sex offender. I took a plea back in 08 when the president got out in 13, and I've been out ever since, and I've complied with every insane thing they've instructed for me.
Insane.
we do understand.
And the weird thing is, like I said, I've had several jobs where I was fortunate to get them. I had to explain everything every time I ever got one. And there was one particular job where I got it, and I rose up the ranks, you know. And then somebody there found out about it. I hadn't lied. I had told the people that hired me, but everybody didn't know. So once I got a little higher and up and up, I was actually let go because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I live here in Washington, D.C. Well, actually, I work in Washington, D.C. I reside right outside in Maryland. And I was terminated for that, and the only reason that was given was, you know, you're a sex offender.
Mm-hmm.
And the weird thing is, even in prison, there was, like, that whole mental thing is a joke. Sad joke played on
it's
everybody.
It's a game. Yeah, it's a game.
Because they make you take all these courses and classes, and quite literally, some of them I went to, and I literally just signed my name to a book, and I left. So there was no treatment. You know, it was just you pay what you pay. And it is the money grab, as you once said. And if I might ask, sir, I don't want to take too much of your time, but like, even when you ask, why don't the judges or why isn't everybody screaming from the rooftop, it's a simple fact. It's a sex offender. Everybody assumes you're getting what you deserve. Like, you're the worst of the women.
Yeah.
Like, you're just, everybody's calling the prayers around, you know, pouncing on children. And most times it's simply not the case. And if I can say so real quick, I like to crush a room where most people think it's a white folk thing. I am a black young male. You'd be surprised how many black folk have this going on in the house that's just not made as big a deal of, because you know all the stereotypes about the young, fast girls, et cetera, but that's another topic.
Absolutely correct. Let me interrupt for one just a second. The Justice Department's own statistics from a report in 2016. The Justice Department's own statistics say 1 in 119 African American males have been convicted of a sex crime.
Mm-hmm.
Or have sex offender. Sometimes it's a drug crime, and it's been changed. I have documentation to that, and they plea for a sex crime instead.
I mean,
it's unbelievable.
I was charged with one thing. By the time they got the jump in the back around, I was like, "Well, take this plea. If you don't, you'll get this and you'll get that. And if you've never been in trouble before and you have no idea about this legal system, you're scared. You're out there. You got a label on you. You're at the mercy, and
you
it never stops. Say this has been. I this happened in 08. Happened 07, went 08, I got on 13, and I'm still struggling with it every day. Like right now, I've been blessed with the fact that I was able to land another job, and I've also risen up in that job, 2 more ranks up. But I still can't find a place to live, because at first when I went to prison, the only thing I had to worry about was if they asked you if you've been convicted of a crime 5 years ago, 7 years ago, 10 years ago. So I was elated when that time had passed, and I figured I can get me a place, and I can move and live on my own. But now, again, this is 2 places here in D.C. When I went to apply for the apartment, now they ask, not argue, but have you ever been convicted of any sexual offense in the tri-state area? So you lie about it, you get found out there's a no. You tell them up front, you lie, there's a no.
So they're creating so again, I apologize for interrupting, but they're creating an underclass, just like the unwashed class in India. They're creating a new underclass in the United States. This is un-American, but this is exactly what they're doing. The more unstable you are, the more likely you are to trip and fall so they can catch you in their net again.
Let me ask you this question. Let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
Do you take the lie detector test every 3-4 months?
Sir, I had to take it every 3 months, and they threaten you with violation if you fail it. And one point in time I failed it, and I told them I was just so mad and so angry and so frustrated, you know what I mean? And they actually used that against me, too. I was like, well, you're going to come back and take it again, and if you fail again. If you fail that test, regardless of the reason, it's a violation.
And they can send right. you, they can lock you back up.
They can mm-hmm. send you correct that's right, so they can send you back.
And it, and those so, quote unquote
so
tests are
yes, it's the extra stress of that, even knowing that when you go into the ticket, so you're already at odds. You know?
So they're subjective. Somebody's reading that. They can read into it what they want.
Mm-hmm. And they most definitely do.
And they absolutely do. So there's no scientific value at all. There's no scientific value on any of the assessment tools.
Oh, yeah, but, no, man, since this happened to me, I've researched things, like even the statistics. They make it seem, well, actually it's a political tool. They make it right. seem like every person that comes out is automatically going bad.
Sir,
don't even support that.
Have somebody go to ajustfuture.org. And sign on for you. I assume you're not able to use the computer, but if you are, it's www.ajustfuture.org. Just read about who we are and sign in, and we'll get in touch with you, and you can get in touch with us.
Will you all get that again, please?
One more time.
www.ajustfuture.org. AjustFuture.org. We're the Just Future Project, and get in touch with us.
And thank you for calling in. Thank you. Wish you all the luck in the world, man. I know you're going through a thing. We got a few minutes left with the show. We'll start with all three of my guests. What would you say to somebody who's listening who may be a sexual offender or his family has a kid or loved one that's confined or classified in this? What would you say to that family or that person?
I would say to get involved. I know it's scary, especially with, in Virginia with the SVP laws because, unfortunately.
SVP stands for?
Sexually Violent Predator, mm-hmm. Which is a misnomer, but... That's the law we have to go with. It's the SVP Act. But I know it's a little scary, but get involved. Go to the website that Garnet just mentioned. Call your state senator and delegate. Find out who they are. I mean, there's tools to find out. Write them. Let them know. Because, right now they kind of feel like, okay, well, they're a sex offender. Nobody's going to care. And, no one's going to speak on their behalf. So they feel like they can kind of do what they want. The Attorney General's office, with all the reforms he's doing for criminal justice, he's certainly doesn't want to touch this or he wants to make it worse. But, write, let them know how you feel about it, that they're wasting your tax dollars. These money could go to protect your children. It could go to proactive programs, help victims of abuse, help, offenders, for lack of a better term, find, outlets and get community support, because that's going to improve your society, your neighborhood, and make it safer.
Okay. Dr. Thompson, what would you say to folk listening, particularly folk like that last caller who's been classified as a sex offender? What would you say to him and to other people listening or families who have somebody with that classification, what they could do to deal with their issue?
Again, I agree with Kirsten. Don't be afraid. Stand up. Join up with people that are doing something. Join up with A Just Future. Go on www.ajustfuture.com.
.org.
And make sure that you collectively work with people like Just Future to help get. We are abolitionists of the civil commitment system.
Correct. Beautiful.
Yes.
Right. Garnet?
Well, the ladies have said it correctly. To add to that, there are 30 states in the United States that do not buy into this scheme. That do not participate.
Is D.C. included in that?
D.C., unfortunately, because of its status, working with the federal government controlling everything, they do civilly commit their citizens. Mm-hmm. So we have to be careful. and they send them down to Buckner in North Carolina.
Right, they're in the federal program.
Yeah, they're in the federal system. But yes, 30 states in the federal, 30 states don't do this. 20 states in the federal government does. But my parting point is that this is being directed by and fueled by a division of Mark Herring's, the Attorney General for the state of Virginia. DBHDS appears to be an unwitting participant. There is not treatment there. We need to take a laser focus. And Bernita said it, Dr. Thompson said it right. Don't be afraid. Stand up. Stand with us. Speak to your state delegates. Speak to, write, tell your story. Go on the website. Get involved. You can get involved a little or a lot. There's something everyone can do. There are so many people that are affected by this, that are touched by this. This is harming our society. This is definitely harming the state of Virginia.
Okay, I just want to add to that I know a lot of folks are worried that they don't want to mobilize, organize, and strategize because they're concerned that their loved one might be retaliated against, mm-hmm. punished. They're doing that anyway. Mm-hmm. They're beating them, they're abusing them, they're mistreating them, they're giving them medication to control. They're doing all that. So when I was injured, my grandmother came down and she took her purse and smacked the correction off. This is back in the 70s. She couldn't do that now. She'd get locked up.
Yes, mm-hmm. she was.
But she hit the guard because they had me in solitary, and I had a bath or shower in about months or weeks. And my grandmother said, I know they're going to do this to you. She hit the guard, and when she left, they came in and beat me everywhere but to Sunday. Mm-hmm. And when she came back the next week, she said, how you doing, son? I said, Grandma, these are the best white folks you want to see in the world. They treat me like they love me. But I was hurting.
Right.
But again, I said that as a joke. People, we have to organize. You can make a change. You can do it. If the families of the people that's incarcerated at these facilities where they're holding people for civil commitments, if the mothers got together every Sunday morning and got together, hundreds of them, and your kids, you go to the legislator, you can do it. When they see numbers and people, they're going to mistreat your loved ones. They're doing it now, even when you're obeying the law. Mm-hmm. So they're going to do it further. So if you want to stop it, we have to organize, mobilize, and get together. As you said, we got to do this as a united front. They are hurting our loved ones, our families. And anybody's listening to this show, you could be designated as a sexual violent predator and be civilly committed because you might unzip in your pants too many times on the street corner. Mm-hmm. And you locked up for life. They can hold you indefinitely. And you go to court, and you ladies right now, this is the second time you've joined us on the show in the past year, and I'm hearing the same thing with stories that's getting worse and worse, and we don't see no relief.
Well, and they don't follow even the laws as they stand. They're not following the laws.
Correct.
It's unconscionable at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, and we want to come back.
Yes.
Thank you very
thank
much
you
for
very
having
much.
Us.
We appreciate
you, ladies,
you
so
thank you
much.
For having us.
You ladies will be back, and we're not going to leave this civil commitment because you don't lock up people without jail due process, and you're mistreating them. And the governor says,
well, they're trying to lock my son up.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's already.
Well, yes, he's already incarcerated, but they're trying to send him to VCBR.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we're out of time, and I want to say thank you. I guess
thank
it's been
you.
Dr. Bernita Thompson. Roots, the school up on First and Kennedy. She's educated a lot of our kids in this city. Kirsten Darby, Authority on Civil Commitment, and of course, Garnett Ballman. Boy, she is a firecracker. I want to thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
And thank all of you for making your calls into us today. I want to say thanks to Mac, also Brooke, and his wife, Pat, a good friend of ours, listen to us every Tuesday morning. They get their coffee and sit down, him and his wife, and listen to Martine and I. And to the gentleman and the lady we ran into at Denny's restaurant on Sunday. We had dinner, breakfast at Denny's on Sundays, and there was a gentleman there busting the tables, and he looked down. And I said, hey, man, what's happening? He said, man, I'm overwhelmed. I said, no, you not. And my wife said, give him something to fire him up. I said, come here, man. I did this. I washed the tables and cleaned the floors. And while I was talking, he said, your voice sounds familiar. Are you Roach Brown? I said, yeah. He said, Jack, I'm not overwhelmed. I am not overwhelmed. And to Bud, hang in there, man. You can make it. It ain't over, brother. And we met another. Every time we go to Dennis, we meet somebody who will hear our voice and say, "Oh, you folks on radio?" And I'm scared to say anything because I don't know if I've done something to them a long time ago. You know? So why are you asking me that? But we meet folks, and to all the people we meet at Mount Enon, at different churches we go to, thank you for listening to the show. The people at Union Temple, we got churches we go to every week. We go to a different church, and folks listen to the show, and it's amazing how many folks listen to Crossroads, not locally, but worldwide.
Good.
Thank you
good.
For your emails, for your phone calls, and thank our three guests for coming in. And we need your help, folks, to make things better for all of us. Yes. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
Back when I had a little, I thought that I needed a lot. A little was overrated, but a lot was a little too complicated. See, zero didn't satisfy.